Welcome to Eltel and John's La Liga Weekly, where order has been restored. Barca lead, Real Madrid chasing them down. You know that's how you want it. It turns out we all underestimated Real Madrid. Yes, even with referees reviewing video evidence as half the country watches on, they still get dodgy penalties. It was roughly in the vicinity of the penalty box. That'll do. In fact, we've learned that VAR exists to stamp out the practice of players making forward runs. Alvaro Morata, Kike and Hugo Mayo were all kept in check this week. Yeah, you cheats, it serves you right. Well done to Gareth Bale for scoring his 100th goal for Real Madrid. He really has come of age as one of the greats of Los Blancos. The way he comes off the bench to replace an 18-year-old when the other team has given up defending is simply magnificent. If he keeps going at this rate, he'll be up there along with the La Liga all-time greats like Jorge Molina and Youssef El-Nesri. Yes, once again, we haven't bothered with the Player of the Week poll because no one can touch the Leganés front man. Now, I'd like to claim credit for last week's intro forcing the Spanish Federation to give the Copa del Rey semi-final rights to 11 sports. Well done to everyone, although 11 still bottled out of showing the Madrid derby in the Saturday afternoon blackout, which was designed in 1962 by a butcher from Burnley who was keen to protect the future integrity of Crawley against Oldham from people staying home and watching their iPads in case Casemiro scored an overhead kick. Yeah, that's how relevant that is. Somehow, Terry Gibson watched it live. I imagine the police will be planning a dawn raid as we speak. Shall we start with the Madrid derby, Terry, which you did watch live one way or another? Everyone wants to know about VAR, I'm afraid to say. Here we are. We haven't been around for much of the season. First time we've really had a long chat about VAR. George, was Morata's goal ruled wrongly offside? Was the incident with Casemiro a penalty? And Cal Ali says, I thought VAR was introduced to make sure the right decisions are made. How was that penalty awarded? And NY Kule, your thoughts on VAR? Clearly, it's got several things right, but it seems to have created more controversy than people thought the technology would have created. There we are.
Yes, I'm a little bit unsure about the protocol now as well, and I'm in favour of VAR, and when I watch games in the Premier League now, when you see a goal that's offside, I automatically think it's going to be, if it's a close call, referred to VAR, and of course it isn't, and that's going to come in the future. I think the West Ham against Liverpool one was a perfect example. I was quite flippant, oh, that's not going to be allowed. Oh, yes, it is, they've got VAR. Yeah. So for clear and obvious ones like that, it's a big help. The ones we saw at the weekend were close calls, but in my opinion, I think VAR is there to judge whether objectively it's outside the penalty area or the foul is inside. I know a lot of people believe that there was two fouls, but there's only one foul. It's a split-second challenge from Jimenez. There is a slight follow-through, but it's all one foul, which clearly starts outside the penalty area.
Yeah, clearly, the knocking over happened outside.
And there's no form of, the referee trying to play advantage. Then there's the second foul, so therefore it's a penalty. It was one foul which started outside the penalty area.
It didn't happen in this case.
It didn't, no. It was one challenge, one foul, outside the box, fell inside the box to the naked eye. In live time for the referee, extremely difficult. When I saw it, I immediately thought, it's not going to be given, it's going to be a free kick. So I was astonished when it was given as a penalty. And when I saw it in slow motion, when I saw the replay, I thought, well, that's outside, it's going to be given as a free kick. So really surprised about that one. I don't want to appear to be all against Real Madrid, because the goal for Atletico from Griezmann, again, was a VAR decision. He wasn't offside. Not conclusively, you couldn't prove he was offside, which is how it should be. But there was the possibility of a foul. We've seen that occur on other occasions this season in other games in La Liga, where an earlier foul, which was missed by the referee, can be brought back by VAR. Again, it was 50-50. I think it was a foul. I think he just nudged Vinicius. There was a slight contact, a slight foul in terms of knocking him off balance, dispossessing him, playing Griezmann through. So that could have gone against Atletico Madrid, and it didn't. So they got the benefit of the doubt on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's fair.
Where are we now?
Well, can I talk about offsides and VAR?
Yeah.
This is the thing that I think annoys me most about it. I'm with you. I'm for it. It's eliminated some of the controversy. It's eliminated most of the conspiracy theories. I know at the intro I claimed otherwise, but to be honest, I am in favour. However, offsides and VAR, I don't think anyone has designed it to start disallowing what looked like, to the naked eye, perfectly good goals. Three this weekend. I'd have allowed Morata's goal. I'd have allowed Hugo Mayo's goal for yep. Celta Vigo. I'd have allowed Kike's goal for Eibar at an absolutely crucial stage. All three of those goals at crucial stages where they are, at best, they're level and may. But what I don't want to see is someone... Their nose yep. is leaning offside.
Yep. I would pass any part of the body yeah. that can play the ball. We yeah. go down that part.
Yeah. And I think that's impossible to judge for one. Even you know, you have to have the camera angle absolutely.
Well, the Eibar one was the only one where the camera was in the perfect angle, and I agree with you. He was just yeah. slightly,
and I don't
slightly
think
offside.
That's not the spirit of offside. In football, we have offside because that frames the whole game. You have to have offside, but it would not ruin the game to any extent to just say, right, we're just going to have a little zone where the striker gets the benefit of the doubt.
Well, the Eibar one, I thought but that was proof. I thought he looked across, and due to the rules, the laws of the game that we have in place now with VAR, he was slightly ahead. But then you could just take the slow motion back and fraction of a second of the ball leaving the boot. It could be, that's how difficult it is. The Hugo Mayo one, I thought was, when I saw the replay of that, I thought, well, it's going to be given because I couldn't see proof that he was offside. The camera angle was awful. I'm not sure. I don't actually think VAR have anything different than what we see. Likewise, for the Morata goal, the camera angle was awful on that. It wasn't looking directly across. So the severe Eibar game, that was directly across and you got the perfect line of it, the perfect view. With the Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid one, I couldn't see the proof. I've seen footage where there's lines horizontal yeah. and vertical, and there's a line down the shoulder of Morata, there's a line down the shoulder of Ramos, and according to them, allegedly, that Morata is in an onside position. So we're talking, again, inches, centimetres. So I when I saw the replay of the Atletico Madrid goal, I thought, that there's no proof there he's offside.
Yeah.
So that'd be given. But it should be a goal.
But again, what I think assistants are doing, I think they're thinking, right, VAR will, if I'm wrong, VAR will bail me out, so I'll stick the flag up. And I think all three of those, I doubt they would have any of them been flagged without the assistant knowing that they've got the VAR backup, that they think, I don't know, I'll put it up.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Which I think is wrong.
And then we had the other one, which was the penalty, which is the one I'm not sure about the protocol, because I commentated on the Clásico. The
Casemiro.
Yes, yeah, the yeah. Casemiro on Morata. Yeah. I commentated on the Clásico, and there was a penalty in that. Luis Suarez got fouled. I think it was, not sure exactly who it was, but I think it was Carvajal maybe, Casemiro. And there was a push. And when you saw the replay, the referee decided to go to VAR. A considerable amount of time, I think it might have gone off a corner or goal kick. Then someone must have said something, communicated with him from VAR. Then he went across to the halfway line to look at footage of the decision, and the decision was left to him to make.
Yeah.
Now, the Morata and the Casemiro one, we didn't see the referee go across, so I'm not even sure. There was a long delay. Because what happened was Casemiro, I thought, hooked his legs into Morata, who was just on the six-yard box, looking to get across Casemiro. Casemiro put his legs in, tripped him. Morata went down and handballed. His arm hit the ball on the way down. So we had a lot of appealing, a lot of debate with the referee, a lot of argument with the referee, players surrounding the referee. But he never came across to look at the decision. Now, I'm not sure if someone had a word in his ear. But he definitely didn't come across and look so again. And then straight after that game, Espanyol against Rayo, the referee did exactly that. There was an incident in that game. He went across to the halfway line, had looked down the camera and made his decision based on that. So I'm not sure what the protocol is. And with something new like this, there are going to be stuff that needs to be ironed out. But everything needs clarification and exactly. So if an offside is given, we need to see those lines, you know, computer generated. If they're going to rely on it being centimetre offside is disallowed. We need that proof. We need the evidence of the referee. If it's going to be the referee making the decision or VAR, we it needs clarity. In by and large, I like it. But this weekend, there's been a number of incidents where it hasn't worked as it should do.
On the game, Spanish Football Canada says, is it time for Atletico and Simeone to end their relationship? Their strengths, their defence and set pieces have declined and they can't create much with their new attackers.
I haven't got the faith in Simeone that I had 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
And when you look at the turnaround in players now, when Simeone first took over, that was an experienced, wily, gnarly team that grinded out wins, clean sheets. They appreciated the fact that they were big, strong, aggressive, well coached, well organised. They had, the added element of being an underdog. They didn't think that you know, nobody likes us, we don't care attitude, we're against Barcelona, we're against Real Madrid. And when you look at the players that were in that team, they were all of a certain age. When I use the word experience, it was an adult football team. It isn't now. And the tweet I saw as well, is he the type of coach to get the best out of them, out of younger players, a new team, younger players? I'm not sure he has a great deal of patience with a lot of people. There's a core of his squad that he tends to rely on. We do see players coming in and going out. In the squad, we've seen players come in and go out in terms of transferred in and transferred out pretty quickly. So it probably does need a little bit more patience from him and possibly the supporters as well. But I wouldn't want to be too hard because of those incidents that we're talking about. In my opinion, 1-0 Casemiro, good goal, outstanding goal, wasn't it? Spectacular. Yep. You know, a fault of Atletico Madrid from a set piece, four players attacking Ramos. He still wins the header.
Yeah.
No one picking up Casemiro. And it was a spectacular finish, so it was a great goal for Real Madrid.
That wasn't for a lack of they all went for the same header, didn't they? It was just
astonishing you can find so much space in a
Casemiro,
packed penalty area from a set piece where the ball's played in. One player wins a header, and there was no one. The nearest player that got to him was Oblak, who ran out and tried to block it. So if you take that in, that was a great goal. Griezmann's goal, good equaliser. At that stage of the game, it was even. I thought both teams were playing well, actually. I thought it was making for a really, really good game of football. And then we start looking at the controversial decisions made and how the difference. I think what sways it to the way that people thought Atletico were really disappointing was the last 15 minutes when it was 3-1, Thomas Partey gets sent off, and it ended up being a really comfortable last 10, 15 minutes for Real Madrid. They played well. I thought Atletico Madrid played well. When you look at the decisions that could have gone either way, I think it was a lot closer game than people made out. So I wouldn't want to be too critical of Simeone. It's my same old moans, really, that he's not as patient as he should be with a new, younger group of players. You look at the back four, Lucas, Jimenez, Arias is a new player. We looked at it was a completely different midfield from the one that used to have Gabi, Thiago, Raul Garcia, Adrian Lopez in it, Villa, Torres, Costa up front. You know, it's a long way away from that type of group. So there's work to be done. I think the club will have patience with him, and I'm pretty sure the supporters in the stadium will. They will still believe he's the right man, but there's a lot of work to be done at Atletico.
Three Real Madrid questions. Zen Green Yoda. Does Terry agree with me that Real Madrid's key personnel, Modric, Kroos, look fitter than last season? Benzema, of whom I am a staunch critic, looks fitter than in the last 5 years. Competition for places keeps all on their toes. Strange not having Ronaldo down the stretch in the really big games against quality opponents in the Champions League and the Clásico. Can they win without a proven superstar? Solari's got them working harder. So that's his central point. Where's Real Madrid's improvement? Five straight wins in the league. Where's that come from?
The big players are playing well again. Modric, I thought there was a lot of people put up for recognition for the man of the match and stuff like that. Spectacular player of the match. Vinicius gets a lot of plaudits. I thought Modric, it's quite surprising he actually won the Ballon d'Or because we see him week in, week out, giving fantastic performances that go unnoticed till last season. I'm not sure why it took everybody so long to come around to the fact that he's a outstanding footballer. I thought he was absolutely brilliant in the game.
He's a grower, though, isn't he? Because he doesn't do anything spectacular. You have to watch him quite a lot to appreciate how good he is.
Yeah, and you have to watch all the little stuff that he does. He sets off the closing down, so his work rate is second to none. for a really talented footballer, he really does work hard. He's great in control of the ball, whether it's long-range passing, short-range passing, working his way out of trouble. I thought he was, in particular, I think he was my man match at the weekend. I've not heard anybody else say that, mention his name in terms of how significant he was in that victory and how significant he has been in the recent run. And he was poor at the beginning of the season. Toni Kroos was poor. He's better. Ramos and Varane are better. Carvajal is better. Benzema is better. I think what's the secret to Solari's success, and I will call it success, because I was driving in doing this podcast tonight, and I was thinking, who would have thought at the start of the season that Santi Solari would be managing Real Madrid and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer would be managing Manchester United, and both of them doing a absolutely sensational work with those two teams. And Solari's success is based mainly down to the fact that he's been brave enough to make the big decisions, and he's actually genuinely got competition for places. So Bale, when he scored his third goal, he clearly looked angry. That will be with the manager. Even his used to supporters giving him grief when he plays away from home. That would have been up yours. I shouldn't be on the bench, as you said in the intro, behind an 18-year-old, behind Lucas Vasquez. So if he gets an angry Gareth Bale playing and stays fit and playing and scoring goals and being... He could be that superstar that we said Real Madrid might be lacking. I still think they've got enough superstars. And I said on last week's podcast, I wouldn't rule them out in the Champions League. If those big players that we talked about, Casemiro is playing better because he's got competition for his place. Reguilon has come in and done fantastically well. Marcelo is under real pressure. He didn't play well in the Copa del Rey against Barcelona. So the competition is there. And that is down to Solari not being afraid to make big decisions.
Now, we are going to do a special midweek podcast. Have we done a midweek one before? We probably haven't, have we? When we were doing our previous show that has nothing to do with this show, I should remember. So we're going to be looking at the Champions League. And it's
we were on appearance money then, John.
Those were the days. speaking of which, shall we pause and have our shadow ad break before we get on to talking? Obviously, we're going to have to look back at the Clásico from midweek, the Copa del Rey Clásico, and Barcelona's game that they have played relatively recently as we talk now against Athletic. So let's pause, see whether we have any adverts. We've got more listeners, but not enough to get any adverts, I don't think. Anyway, bear with us. Welcome back. It's not football, it's La Liga, where the promos make no sense. Don't tell them that next week either, Terry. Right, OK, Barcelona.
If they're listening, I won't be going back on.
you can defend them. You're in the pay of La Liga. Barcelona. So they got a 0-0 draw, so the gap at the top has cut. It's Barcelona leading the way, Real Madrid are behind them. Matthew is concerned of Barcelona run out of steam at the worst possible time. And Zalito says, Do you guys think that the Barca game against the 0-0 against Athletic shows that Valverde has limitations? Stu, the lack of defensive duties for Coutinho and Messi affected Barca. He watched Man City and their press was so effective. Is Valverde strong enough to enforce a high press?
I thought actually, looking at the Barcelona performance tonight, they are faltering at the moment. It's three successive draws. Valencia in the league, Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey again, Athletic Bilbao today. And if it wasn't for Ter Stegen, they would have got beat.
Yeah, brilliant.
There was one in particular, but he made three or four really good saves, and one that was just, I thought it just hit him. And then when you see the replay, the arm goes out, it's strong, ball rebounds safely away.
Iñaki Williams one.
A close range, six-yard box, player turns, and he reflexes to get his arm out and make the block. So that was... It's a hard-earned point and a well-earned point for Barcelona. That is never an easy game for Real Madrid, for Barcelona, for Atletico Madrid. Athletic Bilbao always raise their game. And they are a team that's improving, showing the true form that we thought. It was rather strange how they started off the season under the previous manager. The new manager's made the changes, the necessary changes, and that is always still a tough game. Where I thought Barcelona faltered in the game against Athletic Bilbao in particular was they just didn't function in the attacking half of the pitch whatsoever. Mm. We're talking about the saves from Ter Stegen. Iago Hellerin didn't have to make a save. Mm. So that was where it was lacking. And Athletic Bilbao, let's give credit to someone like Athletic Bilbao, how hard they worked defensively, midfield worked hard, and they still carried a threat in attack. And and Barcelona were fortunate to get the draw. So are they stuttering? Yes, of course they are. We'd expect them to beat Valencia, two behind in that game, came back to draw. They weren't particularly good against Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey. Is it the worst time of the season to be doing this? No, clearly not. They're not playing in the Champions League for another week or so. So it's not the worst time. We've got they're hesitant about playing Messi at the moment. Didn't play him in the first leg of the Copa del Rey and brought him on. He's carrying an injury that we saw him pick up in the Valencia game. That's the worst thing that can happen to Barcelona, because without Messi, with the performance that we saw at Atleti Bilbao, he was the only thing that he was the only player that had any chance of creating any impact on the game going forward. So, and for Barcelona again, it was a disappointing performance from Philippe Coutinho yet again.
Yeah, well, let's get on to him. Always lots of questions about him. Andrew Coutinho, sell or be patient? Can have Dembele and Coutinho switched situations? And Jay Garcia, how much will they get for Coutinho?
That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, you look at him now and his performances, and that will be the big problem for Barcelona. I mean, Liverpool, I'm not sure would spend the money that they got from Barcelona to bring him back with the players that they've got now. It's going to be a tough one.
They overpaid for him massively.
Yes, they did. And I would imagine Valverde gets frustrated with his flippant behaviour in terms of keeping possession of the ball, because that is so important to Barcelona, and you can't afford to give the ball away as much as he does. And sometimes it's a straightforward 10-yard pass, and it might look easy for him to do, but he plays it the wrong side of the player that he's passing to. So if the defender is on defending the left side of Luis Suarez, play it on Luis Suarez's right foot so he can roll the defender, he can protect the ball away from the defender. And Coutinho just casually flicks it in on four or five occasions in that game against Atleti Bilbao on the wrong side, so the defender can win the ball, he can make the challenge. And they didn't need any invitation, did they? Yerry and Alvarez and Nico Martinez to make that challenge. So that was poor from Coutinho on a number of occasions. But it's going to be tough. And all of a sudden it's turned around. They really do miss Dembele.
He doesn't work hard enough, does he, Coutinho?
No, not at all. I think his game is severely lacking all the qualities you need at the moment.
Yeah, because you mentioned Modric earlier. Modric is doing a midfield job. And I know if he's one of the front three, he's got to be more of a goal threat than he is. If he's a midfielder, then he's got to work harder.
And there's a vacancy in midfield because Arturo is missing for, I believe, a month with a hamstring injury. So there's a vacancy there. And it was a position that actually looked like it was going to suit him at the start of the season. I liked the triangle with Jordi Alba, Coutinho in midfield, then Dembele outside. So I thought that really played havoc against defences. But with Coutinho's form, it was clearly he was going to get brought off for Dembele. I was surprised it took so long. And there needs to be a massive upturn in the form. Carlos Elena came on and looked more of a Barcelona player than Philippe Coutinho does at the moment.
Just on Athletic, Nick says, great to see Yeray playing well again, forming a strong partnership with Inigo. Can he get a Spain call-up, or are there better options? It was in the Spain squad, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's a position they're searching for, isn't it? With Piqué departing the scene, they're looking for a permanent partner with Sergio Ramos. It's not going to be too long before Ramos is departing the scene as well. Put aside the fact that he's suffered these illnesses, the cancer periods that he's had. If people don't know, he's suffered with it twice now. Put that aside, he is a fantastic centre-half. People are going to have reservations because he's not 6'2" and 6'3". He's quite small. But he's a good defender. He's aggressive. He's good in the air as well, in terms of, despite his size. And then when you add on the fact he's had two long periods out of the game through having to have cancer treatment, it's an incredible story. It's Sangali is another one at Real Sociedad who played earlier this season in the Basque Derby and came from nowhere. He's a young player, scored a goal, lit up the place. Real Sociedad won at Atleti Bilbao. He had a stroke. He suffered a stroke, which is incredible. And I must admit, when I saw the story and looked into it, I didn't think he'd be able to play again. He's back playing already. So they played Atleti Bilbao last week. And he is, so in between those two Basque derbies, he's recovered from a stroke. So to both of those players, but Yerry Alvarez, while we're talking about Atleti Bilbao, the partnership with Nico Martinez is looking really good as well. Unai Nunez is a really good centre-back as well. So they're well stocked in that position, despite obviously letting, selling Laporte to Manchester City.
And we'll do Williams again another day, but he was superb.
Yep, I think there's been signs of the Athletic Bilbao under the new manager playing more to his strengths in terms of playing passes into space rather than to his feet to hold the ball up. His pace frightens defenders.
Yeah.
And as I said, if it wasn't for Ter Stegen, then he would have been the goal-scoring hero in that game.
Adam, quick last one then on Athletic before we move on to the Clásico. Adam, with the money they can't spend, should they get the world's best coaches? Or they've just appointed a Basque guy who was previously the B-team manager. He's been on the Basque scene for years.
And did a good job at Eibar.
Yeah.
He's doing a good job.
Yeah, so is Garitano the right man?
At the moment, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. No managers forever, so people saying, is Solari going to be there next season? Possibly. Is Solskjaer going to be manager of Manchester United next season? Possibly. They're not going to be there 5 years, 10 years, 15 years like we've seen Sir Alex Ferguson do in the past. So I would say with Solari, I'd say Garitano at the moment. Things are going really well. Just don't mess it up by making a false change when it's not needed.
So the Clásico, Jack says, what happened to Barca in the first half of the Clásico? Was it the lack of Messi, or is there something deeper amiss? So let's have a quick look back on that.
Quite a strange game, I thought, in terms of, I wasn't aware on last week's podcast, because we've had this round of constant rounds of Copa del Rey, I thought it was going to follow suit, then all of a sudden you realise it's the Champions League. The Copa del Rey second leg isn't until the 27th of February. Then they play Real Madrid. That's on a Wednesday. Then they play Real Madrid on the Saturday night, Barcelona. So there's two Clásicos in the space of 4 days. And it kind of had that feel that it was almost like a warm-up from both teams. I mean, Real Madrid played well again. I thought they started the game off better. They could have been two or three goals ahead, I think, but they were wasteful in attacking play. But I thought Barcelona got better as the game went on. And I think just about in the end, of course, Messi coming on helps. I thought just about a draw was the right result, and possibly one that both teams were quite happy with, considering they've now put that to the side and can go, you know, concentrate on other things and come back to that. When Barcelona and Real Madrid have both had Champions League games. Likewise, Betis and Valencia are involved in the Europa League. So it kind of had a feel, particularly the Barcelona-Real Madrid, it didn't carry the same theme into the Betis-Valencia game. That was rip-roaring affair, wasn't it? But the Barcelona-Real Madrid, I think it was a slightly disappointing game, but because of the fact there was never going to be a winner on that night.
Should we talk about Betis? 2-2 against Valencia in that Copa del Rey semi-final. They were 2-0 up, weren't they, until pretty late on, weren't they? And
Last 20 minutes. Marcelino, there's a clue. He started throwing attackers on and being more attack-minded, and they got two goals, and then
Don't go crazy,
Marcelino. Scoring goals, knock that on the head.
Blaugrana wants to know why do Betis, apart from Junior, have such poor fullbacks? Alex, how important is Aissa Mandy to Betis? Or explain to me, Youssef En-Nesyri.
Explain.
Do you remember? Was it you and I commentated on a Malaga game, and he came on and played brilliantly for about 10 minutes. And then not for ages did he play.
No, we commentated on a couple of games when he was at Malaga, and one he looked like a world beater. The next one he looked like he'd never kicked a ball in his life. But that's what you get with young players. So it's really hard to judge them early in their careers how impressive they're going to be. Now, when Leganés bought En-Nesyri for €5 million from Malaga, that's a huge outlay for Leganés, but the raw materials were there, weren't they?
Yeah.
So, playing for a better team, which Leganés, Malaga were clearly struggling last season. He was very young. His first time playing in the, and he's still young now. He played really well in the World Cup, scored a great goal against Spain. He's a player, if people don't know too much about him, he's, I'm guessing, 6'3", 6'4"?
Yeah, big and
very
fast.
Very tall, and he's fast, athletic. So they're the raw materials I'm talking about, and he's improving. His three goals in the game today were fantastic. I mean, we joked about not having a player of the week every week because Messi would win it, but clearly he is the standout player in this one.
And in Betis, fact, he's scored four goals since we last talked, hasn't he? Because they played Monday night as
yes,
well.
Yes, he did. Yeah. Yeah, that was a feisty old affair as well against Rice. So back-to-back wins. Leganés are one of the informed teams in La Liga. And I'm glad because I was talking earlier in the season on a programme saying they clearly had better players than they had last season. They've spent some decent money. They've worked really hard to get better players in. And they were struggling under Pellegrino. And now it's clear, in my opinion, that they're in the 11th position in the league. Back-to-back wins. It's been quite extraordinary. In the last 13 games, they've only had two defeats, and one of those was Barcelona away. So there's consistency there from Leganés. They're moving onwards and upwards, and that $5 million, the investment that Leganés made on En-Nesyri, I can only imagine what it's going to be now.
Yeah. Right, let's move across the big city.
I didn't mention the Betis fullbacks. I agree.
Oh, yeah. They do. Barragán in particular.
Francis is a winger playing fullback, so doesn't really defend. Teo has played there at times as well, so it's clearly
if they're going to play like that, they need good fullbacks.
And ironically, Pacini looks quite good at Valencia, who Betis had a couple of seasons ago, and that was before Kike Setién came in. But it is a position that they do need to strengthen. Mandy is good, Sydney is good, Barcher is good, Zufadal is good. So there's four decent centre backs there. They do play three at the back. They're frustrating. They're a squad that's getting used to playing more games than they've done before. And of course, they're back involved in the Europa League semi-final of the Copa del Rey. Don't want to be too harsh on Betis, because a week ago they beat Atletico Madrid.
That's just
how it goes. The heavy game. They did have extra time against Espanyol as well, didn't they? Then went into the Atletico Madrid game and got the win. Semi-final of the Copa del Rey midweek. Run out of steam in the last 20 minutes and then, getting beat today. So I don't want to be too harsh on Real Betis and Kike Setién.
Only 9 points above the relegation zone. Or sixth, depending on which way you look at it. That's La Liga for you this season.
They're five from the Champions League.
Yeah. let's cross the big city of Seville. Taulo, will Sevilla be able to secure the final Champions League place? Callum, has the number of games caught up with Sevilla? A month ago, they were in a title race. Vlado says, now, Getafe will get that last Champions League place. Sevilla 2, Eibar 2.
What a game.
Cracking game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And massive. I mentioned the Kike no-goal early, massively pivotal. Eibar were 2 up late in the game. Benega had been sent off, and they're showing us, everyone says it's hard to play against 10 men, so there we are. They had him sent off and they came back and scored two goals, Ben Yedder and Sarabia 2-2. Exciting, but they are in a little bit of bother at the moment, Sevilla.
Yes, they were poor. 88 minutes, 2-0 to Eibar, and deservedly so. Could have been more. You mentioned the Kike goal, other chances that went their way as well. Sevilla huffed and puffed without really getting anywhere. On the 83rd minute, Benega gets sent off with one of those tackles that's borne out frustration. Clear second yellow card, and Sevilla looked dead and buried. And so we're on one hand going to refer to them running out of steam because they've had loads of games, and yet they summon up the resolve in the last 7 minutes, plus added on time. They were helped by the fact there were 6 minutes added on. To somehow manage to get a draw out of it. And Andre Silva missed a chance to win it. So it's brilliant sometimes. You watch a game of football and you think, oh, I can switch over now. This game's done, dusted. A remarkable comeback from Sevilla. Tough on Eibar, who clearly deserved to win the game, with a better team, as I said, for 88 minutes. And 88 minutes, Ben Yedder and Sarabia in the 92nd minute. And as I said, Andre Silva had a chance to take all 3 points. So that will boost them. And they're, again, they're one of these teams that straight back involved in the thicker European action this week as well. So it's tough on Sevilla. But if you were asking me, I think the top four is going to be the top four that are there now.
Richard says, 13 draws for Valencia. Has Terry ever had a season as a player when they've had so many draws? Must be frustrating. Gary, now Marcelino has steadied the ship. Is it time for someone else to move them to the next level? 0-0 with Sociedad today, their 13th draw out of 23.
Incredible. Yeah, incredible. And then we said they drew midweek in the Copa del Rey as well, but that they were 2-0 down on that second they'd come at home. It's been an unusual season for not only Valencia. They've drawn 13. Athletic Bilbao have drawn 12. And Villarreal, we'll come to them later on. They've drawn 11 as well. So significant amount of draws from teams that we thought would be challenging top half, clearly. Valencia, Athletic Bilbao, Villarreal, challenging for, genuinely challenging for, yeah, Champions League. I mean, fourth place we always think is up for grabs, don't we? I think we always assume that Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico do take the first three places. After that, those teams, Atletico Bilbao, Villarreal, Valencia, it wouldn't be unrealistic to say at the start of the season that all of those three could have been challenging. Valencia maybe still will do. But no, it is a complete contrast to what we saw last season when they were definitely more attack-minded. And that hasn't been the case this season from Valencia. Scored, 24 goals in 23 games?
Yeah.
That tells you all. They've conceded 20. So you can see what sort of team they are. They're obviously cautious. They're not taking the chances that are coming their way. And it was interesting how they played against Real Sociedad. Or rather, it was interesting how Real Sociedad played. They're playing well, by the way. They're sneaking up the table quietly under the new manager, Alguacil. Three wins, three draws for him. So he hasn't lost the game yet. They just kept possession, particularly in the second half. Good possession as well. Didn't create too many chances. It wasn't boring possession. And they took the life out of Valencia by just keeping the ball. Technically, really good performance from Real Sociedad. In terms of how to defend, it was different to parking the bus, putting everyone back behind the ball. They just had long spells of possession where Valencia couldn't get the ball off them.
A crazy old game. Getafe 3, Celta Vigo 1. Celta were in front to Araujo in the second minute. And then they self-destruct. Well, partly the offside Hugo Mayo thing was important.
But the penalty was a daft one to give away, wasn't it?
So they gave away a daft penalty. Maxi Gomez talked himself into a red card. So,
on the back of that penalty?
Yeah, in the space of seconds, they'd thrown away a good position.
In the space of seconds, he got three cards. Yeah. I can't get to the bottom of this. I haven't seen the footage where he does anything off the ball. It's clear he's having a pop at the referee for giving the decision to Getafe. And the referee, it's quite funny, actually, shows him...
Flamboyantly, yes, yes.
Three cards. It's up. Yeah. So he doesn't do anything between the first yellow and the second yellow.
Yeah, because he literally flat yellow, red.
Red, yeah. So it's not like he did the yellow, the first one, and continued arguing. He just stood there with his arms out. I think his arms went out after the first yellow as if to say, what are you booking me for? And then the ref went whack, yeah, whack.
That was it.
Oh, off you go. And he was gone, and it was the game changed then. And then there was the Hugo Mayo disallowed goal for offside, which I still don't think was offside. There's a complaint going in from Celta Vigo. It's not going to do anything.
No, we're not going to go back. And
Maxi Gomez, they might
replay
try and get away with his ban, I guess.
But you can't. They're never going to overrule a ref over a red card for dissent.
But if it's a red card for dissent, that's surely just a red card.
Yeah, but
so I don't get the two yellows and a red in the space of 3 seconds.
I know what you mean, but you can't go rescinded ones that he's. If the ref says it's dissent, it's dissent. The Federation can't change that, surely.
Well, the protocol of cards.
Yeah.
Two yellows means a red, but he didn't have time to get the second yellow.
Yeah, they won't change that, I'm certain. Espanyol 2, Rayo Vallecano 1. So another one where they came from behind with late goal. Sociedade with a lovely
great goal
at the end, 95th minute.
It was, yeah.
So that was important for Espanyol, wasn't it? And a real blow for Rayo, who were threatening to start shooting up the
table. Yeah, they lost the game Monday evening, didn't they, to Leganes at home, and then lost that one. But they are playing well. They just got to keep their spirits up, and they'll have a fighting chance of staying up.
And then Huesca. Lee, two good wins in a row from Huesca. The first podcast, he's calling you to book here, Terry.
Yeah, I know.
The first podcast,
entirely right.
Terry says they're dead and buried, but could they pull off an unimaginable escape? It's good to hold us to account.
Well, they've had so many games this year where they've drawn and they've lost by the odd goal. They were so close. They've made a couple of new signings, and unfortunately, and this was, I don't know if you knew about this story, I think it's a massive story. It really put my back up. I've got nothing against your own, but I was absolutely delighted that Huesca won.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Huesca got a player from, I'm trying to work this out, Manchester City on loan.
Yeah.
Yangel Herrera. He's come in, made a real big impact, win and a draw in his first two games. Central midfield player, and it clearly going to make Huesca better. And so he's coming on loan from Manchester City to Huesca. He'd previously been on loan for two seasons in the MLS to New York City. And Manchester City didn't allow him to play against Girona. Now, I was trying to work out a comparison. It would be like Udinese
loaning
a player to Burnley.
Yeah, and saying they can't play against Watford.
Yeah.
When that link existed, yeah.
But at least, well, we do, yeah, we know, everybody knows there's a link from Manchester City to your owner, New York City, the club in Australia. But where does this stop? Yeah, I mean, yeah. it's and the headlining marker was, are Manchester City playing in La Liga?
Yeah, yeah. And the answer to your question, it should have stopped before that point. That's wrong, isn't
yep.
it? That's unacceptable.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So I was kind of poetic justice that Huesca got the win and played well again. Away from home, Chimi Avila with a couple of goals, and they were fantastic. Girona were unlucky. They hit the woodwork on a couple of occasions. Bernardo gets sent off. A second yellow card is not a foul. It's an aerial challenge. A player exaggerating any contact made with him. The referee balled it, sent him off. So it wasn't Girona's night, but Girona are really struggling. I think it's 10 without a win. 4 points, four draws from those 10 games.
The drop zone.
Yep, they're suffering at the moment. And we had a tweet last week about the managers under pressure. And I think Eusebio is one of those that's going to be under pressure, particularly if he can't win against a team that's not allowed to play one of their best players because he's owned by the other club.
Don't forget to tell your friends about this podcast, retweet, repost, whatever you can to try and get us more listeners. Listening figures were up. We were quite encouraged by them. But we do need your help. We don't have the vast marketing arm of a major corporation such as Sky Sports that we used to have. But there we are. Who knows?
We're on loan.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. No, we're not. No. Permanent. Yeah, being given. Yeah, yeah. Bosmans.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of Bosmans.
Free agents. So yep. Yeah, that's what we are. What's his name? What's his name? He was at Fulham now, who was in La Liga, and Ryan Babel. That's
yep.
it. Pops, pops up. Yeah, the Ryan Babel of broadcasters just popping up and thinking, oh, I forgot about him. Ahmad, right, what's going on with Real Valladolid? They started the season pretty well, top half, but now they've taken a nosedive.
Massive nosedive.
Yeah.
Two wins in the last 14 games. So that tells you exactly how they're slipping down the table. I'm astonished, actually. I'm looking at Sergio as manager. Tony Villa has clearly been one of their better players this season. Started off really well. Has faded a little bit, in all honesty. But no worse than anybody, no more than anybody else in the team. He was on the bench at the weekend, so I think that's a big call. And also, I'm frustrated the fact that Enes Unal doesn't play more, because from what I've seen of him this season, a considerable amount of play, he's always looked them clearly their most dangerous attacker. They also signed Duje Chop, who's disappeared completely. He's totally out of favour. I think there's two players there in La Liga that know their way around the penalty box, that could cause problems. They're not scoring enough goals. They're going with Oscar Plano and Sergi Guardiola, who's an interesting player. He scored loads of goals in the second division last season, got signed by Getafe, and Bordalás never gave him a hint of giving him a chance. Understandable when you say they've got Angel, Jorge Molina, and Jaime Mata. So he's gone out to Valladolid, and those two are playing week in, week out, not scoring goals. And it's frustrated me in the past when I do see a considerable amount of strikers in Spain that like to drop off, get the ball to feet, play in between the lines, never running behind, never gotten anything in the penalty area, never looked like scoring a goal. They're playing two of those at the moment. So I'm surprised at the team selection. He looks like he's losing his nerve a bit at the moment, Sergio.
And then that obviously brings us to Villarreal. Cambo with the Europa League providing extra games. Could Villarreal be in massive trouble? Yes.
Yeah, they're in massive trouble. Yeah. They really are. When you're at this stage of the season, you're second from bottom, you've won three games. Is Europa League a distraction? It might be one of those games where they suddenly find some form. You know, they're desperate for it. It's 10 without a win. So they need a win from anywhere, and that win just might. We keep saying that, and we're well over halfway in the season now, and no sign again. And see the performance at the weekend on Friday evening against Valladolid. It could have gone either way that game. Both teams were threatening, but never really looking like scoring a goal. So they're in real trouble, Villarreal.
So that's everyone done.
Just sacked the manager.
Yeah,
that's 10 without a win and three
Lewis,
different managers.
Luis
now.
Garcia Plata. Yeah. He's not doing anything. Bring him back. The two just have it on a job share for the rest of the season. That's all the games for now. Right, Third Man Runs asked a question about the women's game in Spain. Can I buy time on that? I used to know the answer to that question. I remember I did commentate on a Spain women's game. I haven't looked recently, so let us buy some time. I don't want a flannel, so let us buy some time, and I'll ask around. We'll come back to you next week. Mark is stateside and listening to us. Good to have you along, Mark. I'm really interested, he says, to hear your perspective about La Liga's media priorities outside of Spain. It was taken off the two, I didn't know all this. It's quite interesting. Taken off the two major US TV providers before announcing the Miami debacle, which was what was a £5 a month cable and is now £45 a month. Losing US eyeballs can't be helping growth while they actively pursue it. Based on this and your UK experience, does La Liga care more about media revenue or the number of eyeballs that can easily access?
Well, Tebas made a big play, didn't he, on being appointed as president of the federation, that he wanted to close the gap in terms of revenue on the Premier League.
Yeah.
Because it's a million miles away. The Premier League is a million miles away. My issue is with it is this, that in Spain, next season, the Premier League is going to be streaming.
Yeah, yeah.
And already speaking to people in Spain, when I go there, they're not going to subscribe.
Yes.
Because it's an extra subscription. Yeah. Sorry. Exactly the same as here. And I kind of look at it, the money, I might be completely wrong, I've got no inside knowledge of anything like this. The big money for these big leagues in Europe must come from countries around the world which haven't got their own big leagues.
Yes.
In England, the Premier League is the big league, of course, rightly so. And people like the fact that there's other European football around that they can add on.
Yeah, but mainly your educated
in Spain,
football fans. Not
La Liga
millions.
Is the big league.
Yeah.
In Germany, Bundesliga is the big
yeah.
league.
Yeah.
So I don't, I can understand America being a revenue, big revenue for the Premier League, for La Liga. I can understand in the Far East as well and places like that, would it be big revenue? But it's difficult how to work out how all the countries combine and play it, European countries in particular, where the domestic league is always going to be the strongest one. I can't imagine. I have no idea the revenue the Premier League get from Germany, France, Spain.
Yeah, the
Italy.
Premier League does well abroad. It does better than Spain abroad in terms of money. I can understand why Spain find that frustrating. All of those poorly worded promos.
10 years of Messi and Ronaldo. It should have been and Real Madrid Champions League, yeah. Barcelona Champions League.
And you look at the UEFA coefficients. League. You look at the trophies won. Spain has obviously been the superior league. However, TV production is not as good. There are empty seats at the grounds. They don't tell you far enough out of advance when
fixtures.
The games are being played. It's literally not light enough in the grounds. So there are lots of little things that they really should have sorted out before they try to exploit and screw the last little bit of money out of their overseas rights.
Yeah.
They need to make their product better. And I all this talk of the Netflix of football, you know, the Premier League are talking about that at the moment. They're very carefully looking into it. Do they need a big broadcaster? Can they just sell direct? Obviously, that's what people are considering, but people will only really do that, only take out yet another subscription. Bear in mind the Serie A has gone off 11 sports now, so there's another one to pay.
Yeah.
So, and people are understandably getting sick of it. But as you say, for your core, so in England the Premier League, in Germany the Bundesliga, in Spain La Liga, they might you could probably screw more money out of people because it's their top priority.
Yes.
The Liga following, we love you all, but it's a small community. You know, people love it, but there aren't going to be 10 million people watching a football match.
No.
There just aren't, because it's a foreign league. So you can't. So just keep it on the major.
It needs
on
marketing.
As big
it needs
a
promotion
as you can get it on.
Yep.
And I think the same for minority sports. I think they're all crazy, the minority sports, when they take it off terrestrial TV. Stuff like cricket. When I was a kid, you know, I grew up liking cricket, playing cricket and all of that. They took it off terrestrial TV and kids don't play it anymore. As simple as that. They get more money from satellite broadcasters. So what?
Exactly.
There we are. Anyway, so there we are.
Rant over. John Driscoll ranting on the podcast.
Yes.
I've never heard that before. John, calm down.
Yes, right, I will. Last word from Mike. Don't forget, well, he asks us about watching the Liga 1-2-3, so second division games on YouTube. Give it a go. They are there. Watch them. So if it's there, watch it. Right. So before we go, we need to do the predictions. No one got all three scores correct. There's no prize at the end of this, by the way. So there'll be lots of love and kudos coming your way if you are the first one to get right. So we have picked out Celta Vigo versus Levante, which is the early game Saturday. And then the two later games on Sunday. So Villarreal against Sevilla, Betis against Alaves. We'll send this out on our new at La Liga underscore weekly Twitter account. Terry, do you want to go with Celta Levante?
Levante not helped by the fact that one of their fullbacks is now in prison and staying there for some considerable amount of time, by the way, by the looks of it, which is Tonio of Levante. He's been held up for all sorts of things, and he sounds like something off the Wild West. So I'm going to go with Celta, who were unlucky at the weekend against Getafe. At home, Aspas came off the bench at the weekend as well. So I'm going to go for Celta Vigo to win 2-0 against Levante.
Right then. Villarreal against Sevilla. Funny one, isn't it? Because they're both playing Europa League.
So there's no real obvious benefit there. Benefit, home advantage. I'm going to go, surprisingly... No, I'm not. Yes, I am. I'm going to go 1-0 VRL.
And Betis against Alaves, the late game, Sunday.
I'm going to go for a Betis win there by 2-0.
2-0. Right. OK, so get involved on the Twitter. We'll tweet that out anyway. And then, yeah, we'll give you a mention if you get it right, actually. We must, have a detailed look at that. So, yes, thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, we've got our midweek Euro... preview podcast. So we'll see you for that. Bye-bye.